The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
So I want to talk about the Defence Forces, the Reserve Defence Forces. You would have seen the story maybe in the Irish Times that because of budgetary constraints, the government failed to pay members of the reserves last year due to what they say were greater than expected recruitment levels. But who are they? What are they? What do they do? Could or should they be doing anything different? We're going to find out because Declan Power, the security analyst, is with me. So Declan, we'll start with that. For people not in the know, I mean, who are the Reserve Defence Forces?
Well, a lot of your listeners are probably old enough to remember the initials FCA and what that meant, and it got enshrined forever in one of the Saw Doctor songs. And for a lot of us who've served in the Defence Forces, that's where we started our career. And the FCA was, Osquelga stood for Fórsa Cosunta Áitiúil, which translates into Local Defence Force. And they were created, like most reserves, very similar to the UK during the Second World War, where there was a need for a sort of a home guard, a dad's army, as they were pejoratively known at the time. And that morphed then over the years. It developed. It became a fairly integral part of the Defence Forces in terms of home security and defence, particularly during the Troubles in the 70s and 80s and into the 90s. And they were organised on a regional basis. So everywhere there was a military barracks, there would be a reserve, an FCA headquarters.
Yeah.
And you could, you know, depending on what was available, you could join. They were the same. They mirrored what the regular army were doing. And the whole idea was that they could be an augmentation, an adjunct. And during the height of the Troubles, when there was a lot of need for regular troops on the ground in support of the Gardaí and big searches, it wasn't uncommon for members of the reserves to be called up to fill roles in barracks, security duties, administrative duties,
okay. And
things like that. And to this day, they still do that, particularly in the naval reserve, which used to be known as Anslua Murray. And now one of the things that has happened to get us where we are now, there was a review of the reserve some years back and a reform of them. And the idea was that you wouldn't have independent reserve units. They would become subunits of regular army units. That didn't really work. Part of the reason for that, the idea was that it would bring up the standard of training.
Yeah.
But what didn't happen was, if you want reservists to be able to do that, you have to make provision to be able to pay them appropriately, to be able to protect their civilian employment as well. So then with cutbacks, with this slump that happened in the mid-90s, economic slump in this country, the reserves suffered because of that. They were allowed wither on the vine, and that was a shame. A lot of senior officers in the Defence Forces maintained that there was a lack of plug-in to the general community when the reserves dwindled.
Yeah.
The changing of the name from the FCA to the Reserve Defence Force was to give it a more professional image. Now, the reality is, today, you can join the reserves.
Yeah, what's the level of commitment today if you join, and what likely are you doing?
So, for most people, it would mean paying attention to advertisements on the websites. There's normally a recruitment in their area on an annual basis.
Mm-hmm.
And you would sign you swear an oath of allegiance to the state. Like, it's not like joining the GAA. No disrespect to the GAA. It's not some club. Some people kind of talk about it in those terms. Now, there is a sort of a club-like atmosphere, if you like, because people know each other from the same community.
Yeah.
When you're in uniform, when you're on training or on duty, you're subject to Defence Force regulations. And you would commit to training one night a week, usually a two-hour period, and then a yearly camp, which is anything from 1 to 2 weeks. Now, on the yearly camp, you're usually paid.
Yeah.
And when you're a qualified soldier of whatever rank, you are in a position where you can volunteer or be asked to do security duties, to maybe partake in barrack guard, which is a 24-hour arms duty in a barracks, and indeed to fill other roles in a barracks if they were needed. Now, it hasn't happened that much in the last while. And I believe since I was talking to your researcher yesterday, one new change is that the Defence Forces now pay reservists for every fourth training night that they attend, which is a new, that didn't happen in my day.
Mm.
You only got paid when you went to an annual camp, or if you did a security duty, you got paid the same rate as a regular soldier for that, which wasn't a whole lot. But what did happen in the 70s and 80s, because of the Defence Forces needs, soldiers from the reserve were called up. Some of them stayed on what became known as full-time security duties. Sergeants, captains, you know, people of that rank where they were experienced, and they filled roles in barracks.
Yeah.
And it was a little bit of exploitation, though, by the state, because they didn't have the same rights to pension or the same rights to sick leave and things of that nature. Okay. Well, but that was eventually made right, and they were subsumed into the PDF.
Declan Ganley is with us as well, a businessman and entrepreneur. Of course, people will know him well. And Declan, I know that this is kind of a matter close to your heart very much. How would you assess the system that Declan Ella just described, and what changes would you like to see in that system, if any?
Well, first of all, I agree with everything that Declan Power said. It's you know, framing of the situation is correct, in my opinion. I served in the FCA and then the RDF for the best part of 20 years. From the middle of the 1980s, I saw huge changes. And what Declan talked about there in the uprooting of it from local community, I think was a massive mistake in hindsight. I understand why it was tried. I understand the experiment. I think the numbers don't lie. If you look at the numbers for, we'll call it the Army Reserve, and of course there's a small Naval Reserve as well, but for Army Reserve, whether it's FCA, LDF or RDF, you go from 1946, 37,000, by 1950, 26,000, by 83, 20,000, by 1989, 15,000, and today, 1,400. The numbers don't lie. They have a total, I see, that they've brought on this year of 76 new recruits with 227 in training. In Glenamaddy, County Galway, a small town in County Galway, on a Tuesday evening in the 1980s, we would have somewhere between 30 and 40 lads showing up for training on a Tuesday night. And we would have to cull that number down to 20 to 20, 22, 23, because that's the most that we could bring into Tuam on a Sunday for a Sunday morning and Sunday afternoon training. In Tuam, I remember, I think it was 1987, we were capped at not being allowed to bring more than 120 to the annual training camp. We're an artillery battery, the 13th battery it was called at the time, the 5th Field Artillery Regiment. We couldn't bring more than 120. Today, the number in Tuam is 5. There are 5 people serving. There was a whole artillery battery from Tuam. We had a headquarters in Tuam, in the center of the town. It's there now. It's a derelict building. The gates that we had made for it voluntarily, no one ever paid anybody for them, are still there, a great old building. And that's the same in towns like Tuam all over the country.
But you paint a picture of how valuable it was, or certainly how numerous the kind of personnel were compared to today. But what would you say to people listening to this who would shrug their shoulders to that and say, well, who cares? You know, the troubles have come and gone, and the need for them has come and gone, and you know, let's get on with kind of equipping and resourcing the defence forces proper and forget the old FCA.
Look, the thing about having any military is that hopefully you never need it, but if you do need it, it needs to be good, and you cannot predict accurately what the event is going to be, what the threat is going to be. That's the only reason for having an army. It's that when you need it, it is there. And in our case, and we are seeing a big shift. If you look at Poland or the Baltic states or Germany right now, there is a big shift back to relying on reserve forces, localized forces, localized capability that at a moment's notice or at almost no notice, there are people that can be mobilized or even mobilize themselves in a local area to be capable of mounting a defense, an action, whatever that might be. We used to have that capability, even when we had no money in the 1980s. I saw it. I saw it 3 times happen myself. I saw that capability mobilized locally in a matter of minutes. We could not do that today. And we have a lot more money today than we did back then. And it's not a matter of throwing money at the problem, in my opinion. I think the buttons of the Irish Army and of the Reserve Defence Forces have the letters IV, Irish Volunteers, on their buttons. It's a voluntary service. And Declan Power's right. It's not the GAA. It's not that much unlike the GAA. You swear an oath to uphold the Constitution. I swore it, and I took it seriously back in the 1980s. you are subject to military regulations. It is, by the way, it is a phenomenal formation tool for young people. And for those that are listening to this right now, I would say, even though the process of getting you in, it's not a perfect organization at the moment. It needs to be restructured and reformed, but yeah, you are needed. And even showing that there's demand to do this, even if you aren't taken in because all of these health checks, there's a massive bureaucracy in trying to get people on the books right now.
Okay, and Declan Power, I assume you're in agreement with the value of it, but then in what way would you change? Are there kind of models? We've mentioned a couple of other jurisdictions there, both of you did. Are there models we should look at, or is it just a case of equipping what we have or going back to the old local FCA route, or what is it?
Well, first of all, just to amplify a point Declan was making there, that there's no shortage of people looking to serve in the concept of an army reserve in this country. There's no apathy with young people that I've found about this kind of thing. What we need to do is to create the right mechanism for them to plug into. It's not about money. They should be paid when it's relevant. But nobody's joining the reserves to make money.
Become a billionaire, no.
But it's, you know, so it's appropriate. That's not the issue. The issue is, one, Declan touched on it, it's far too bureaucratic and slow. We lose some very capable young people because they're waiting to do medicals, doing whatever. And their lives move on. They've moved on to third level education. They've left, they've gone abroad, whatever. And that's a loss for the organisation. It's a loss for the Irish state. So what we need is a little bit of a leap in imagination. You asked about other jurisdictions. We should look at the UK, we should look at the Nordics in particular. I have served overseas with members from both who were reservists and very capable and professional people they were. We should retain and reimagine and revitalise the regional structures. But we should now also create another layer of the reserves at the third level sector, aimed at the third level sector. That's what happens in the Nordics. It's what happens in the UK, France, Australia. They all have, in the UK, they call it the University Officer Training Corps. Now, obviously, it's not just going to be aimed at universities. But the point I'm making here is that there is an untapped source of interested talent. Yeah. People who don't want to make a career as a professional soldier, who would be more than happy to sign on for a few years as a reservist if they could join their local college contingent, train with them on a weekly basis, and be able to give their specific expertise if they want to serve in a cyber or an engineering capacity, or to serve maybe in an infantry or an artillery unit, as Declan, and indeed I did myself back in the day.
All right, both Declan, thank you very much. Declan Power, security analyst, Declan Gadley, businessman and entrepreneur.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.